Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
It's time for Wednesday Night Rugby. Just making his way into the studio. He's going to make a grand entrance, I think, at this stage, is Jerry Thornley of the Irish Times. And joining us on the line tonight as well for the first Wednesday Night Rugby of the season is Liam Tolan. Liam, I'll say good evening to you first of all.
How are you, Richie?
Seeing as Thornley can't be bothered getting in here on time. Look at him and he's grinning away coming in just to my right. Thank you so much.
I'm sure he's in a very sharp suit. He's made up for it.
About that. Dare we give away the secrets of Jerry Thornley's wardrobe live on air? He says you're in a very sharp suit tonight, Jerry.
No, I'm not. I was trying to turn off my phone. It wouldn't turn off, so I've left it in there with JP.
It's about time you start making more of an effort. I think you're just keeping it on to see what the Arsenal transfers are going to be before the window closes.
Did you have to bring them up?
Sorry, I do apologise. We'll have to turn to the looking ahead to the Pro 14, and it's, as we mentioned in the news round a little bit earlier on, Liam, this has taken some getting used to say the words even Pro 14 with the addition of the two South African sides, the Southern Kings and the Cheetahs, who actually visit Ulster on opening night on Friday. First of all, I don't think I've heard your thoughts on the addition of the two South Africans to the Pro 14. A positive or a negative in your view?
I suppose I've both positive and negative. The negative, starting off with the negative, is the player welfare issue. Obviously, there's added travel time, there's added demand on the players, there's added cost to those teams as well going. And I know that the Guinness Pro 14 will redress the balance and the difference. So for the teams that the normal costs, say if Leinster or Munster are travelling to Italy, if that's costing whatever amount of thousands it is, it's going to be more expensive to go to South Africa, and the difference will be delivered by the Guinness Pro 14, is my understanding. So there's a welfare issue around that in terms of, and managing that is going to be very, very important. The positives are huge. There's a huge TV population in South Africa that simply doesn't exist in British Isles and in Ireland, the Guinness Pro areas, that is. So obviously we have 5 million or so, whereas in South Africa, they've multiple millions as well. So there's a bigger market. And if it proves fruitful, maybe then there'll be a bigger ambition to go west into North America. So who knows where it's going to take. You've got to give everybody involved a lot of credit to have turned this around so quickly. And then the excitement of playing an Irish team playing in South Africa is very, very exciting. Having toured there a few times, it's a wonderful place to go to, and there's no time zone difference. For the casual viewer, though, who's looking at, well, how does this all meet out? There's going to be 21 rounds. You play everyone in your own conference, and then you play everybody in the opposite conference. So 7 in each conference. You play everyone twice in your own, which gives you 12 games, and then you play the 7 teams in the opposite. And here's the bit that's going to keep the juices flowing. The home unions, if I'm correct, get to nominate the remaining two derbies. So there's two Irish provinces in Conference A and two in Conference B, and those significant derbies will continue as we've always liked them.
Yeah. Jerry, were you for or against it?
When I first heard it, I was against it because it just sounded too gimmicky, and I'm very wary of expansionism because it leads to confusion. You look at the Super Rugby Championship, nobody, even in New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, Argentina, Japan, whoever else is in it, has a clue how that works anymore. It's got so confusing. And I think there's a danger that, I think the best competitions in the world are the ones that are the most settled and have the same number of participants, the same format, year after year after year. That being said, something had to be done to redress the financial imbalance, compared to the French Top Couture, which generates almost 100 million a year, and the English Premiership as well, and the Pro 14 lags well behind that. So hats off for having some degree of ambition to redress that balance. The one other flip side, of course, that with an uneven number of fixtures, some teams will have one more home game as against others who will have one more away game, and that's not ideal either. But look, it's worth certainly giving it a try, and we'll see how it goes.
Are you just looking forward to the couple of trips to South Africa a year? Is that what you're...
Are you kidding me? Do you seriously think the Irish Times is going to send me to South Africa, to Port Elizabeth, for a nice sunny weekend by the coast? Well, no, I don't think so.
Well, that's the weird thing, is that we're suddenly looking south towards South Africa for these...
I've never been to Italy for a Pro 12 games. I'm hardly going to go to South Africa for a Pro 14 game.
But it just seems, in their efforts to expand and their efforts to, as you put it, Jerry, redress the balance in terms of revenue that exists in France, and I suppose in England to a degree as well, they've had to think outside the box.
Yep.
But this, to me, seems so far outside the box that it's bordering on bizarre. I mean, because you're trying to access a TV market that you'd no right to access before, basically by adding in two sides who aren't even that brilliant within the realm of South Africa.
Yes, true. But if it generates more revenue and it generates more spectator appeal and it makes the competition more popular, more financially remunerative, then it has to be a good thing for all around, all concerned. It makes it more attractive to TV companies as well. And there's no doubt that the Pro 14 needs that.
Given how South African sides have fared in Super Rugby, Liam, would the ultimate goal be to, and we're probably getting way off point here, would the ultimate goal to be to migrate everybody, the main Super Rugby sides from South Africa over to the top 14 as it is now en masse?
Wow, that's a big question, isn't it? I'm just thinking as you were kicking it over and back there about the shop window it provides for South African players. And you're right, the two South African teams that come in won't be full of household names that we're used to, certainly from the Rugby Championship, etc. But it does provide a huge shop window for the Irish teams that are picking up a lot of South Africans. You think of the new coaches that are coming into the system that will be desperate, like you think of Bernard Jackman and Dragons, he'll be desperate to try and start building up a whole new regime. And you go down through it, like it's such an exciting few weeks ahead of us and few months ahead of us with Michael Bradley and Zebre, Cockerell, the Lunatic in Edinburgh, and so many other coaches. And obviously Connacht have their new coach as well, and Kieran Keane. So I just see huge, well, I'd be a half glass full anyway, kind of a fella, but I just see a wonderful opportunity. And Jerry's right, of course, because does it, you know, worst case scenario, if it was on three television platforms at the same time, you'd be like, good God, it's impossible to keep up. I've no loyalty to anything. Yeah. So I suppose that sense of brand has to be created. But I think it's really, really exciting to think that, you think of Ulster playing early doors in the South African, like how do they analyze the potential opposition? So where is it going to go? How the styles the games are going to play? It's going to be a whole new style again as well. And certainly reflecting on the Women's World Cup, which I went to two of the games. I went to the France game and I went to the opening game against Australia. I just adored watching them play because the ball was in play so much more often. Now we've got another style of South Africans coming in. What are they going to demand from the Guinness Pro 14? So I'm just fascinated. I'm really excited by it. I'm energized by it. But I rightly see the potential just from a player as well. For point of view, like you look at Leinster, are shorn an awful lot of their top class players. Like it's ridiculous. Great to see Jamie Heaslip coming back and Jack Conan. That type of competition is going to be wonderful to watch and observe. But like they have huge strength and depth. Other teams simply don't have it. Like the likes of Connacht obviously don't have the same strength and depth. So these added journeys, are they going to put more pressure on players, extra games, etc., etc.? It'll be really, really interesting from a player welfare to see how it all pans out as well.
We're talking about South Africans coming into the competition. The main news that's hovered over the Pro 14 in the off-season has been some South Africans leaving the competition, those being Razi Rasmus and Jacques Neighbour down to their native South Africa from Munster. And it is the fact that they're still there, Jerry, I suppose raises a lot of questions about what kind of season Munster have in store for them when they don't know going into the season exactly what's next.
Yeah, it seems like it doesn't seem like a recipe for success at all when you know that your head coach and your main defensive coach's assistant coach are leaving halfway through the campaign. They had a remarkable emotional roller coaster of a campaign last season to the backdrop of Anthony Foley's passing, and the response from the organisation moving into their new home in Limerick and from the coaching staff and from the players and from the fans was quite extraordinary, and it made for a very memorable campaign. Mm. How do they follow that now? They find themselves at the start of the season with a head coach who the playing squad said even at the end of last season was going to be here for the long haul, and they presume was going to be for the long haul, and now he's going because of the lure of South Africa to go home. And it's not ideal. Obviously, if they had a successor lined up, the successor ideally should be in situ now, so they don't have a successor lined up.
Does this just point out how badly Munster and the IRFU were caught in the hop with all this?
Yeah, it does a bit, and it also suggests that
nobody comes off well from this as I see it.
No, not really. But then again, you can't really blame Munster and the IRFU too much if Razi Rasmus has basically decided he wants to go home and is engaged in a 6-month get-out clause. I mean, they've decided to hold him to it because they don't have a successor ready for him. Whether they go within or from abroad, I see Razi Rasmus has been touting Felix Jones as a potential successor and would like to see the success come from within. You can't help but wonder, would it be too soon for him? And, you know, we've seen this happen before in Irish rugby when we promote from within, that it can be too soon. All in all, the mix does not seem right. It doesn't seem anything like ideal. I don't know what you think, Liam, but it can't be ideal that you, as playing squad, know their main two coaches are leaving halfway through the campaign.
Yeah, like when you think of the emotion of the journey they've been on, and to think, by the way, that the year is nearly up again, like we'll be there's an anniversary that's coming around the tracks as well, which in itself is going to be like, how quick does the year go, man? But you think that emotion is going to revisit again, but you look back at that game against Glasgow and Thomond Park, where, like, good God, if you had the entire All Black history of players out there, they wouldn't have beat Munster that day. And that was partly because of Rasmus and obviously how he managed the whole environment. But the emotion put them into a place that no team really should have been in. Now, you can't rebuild a new season around that. You can't expect to bounce on from that. That's why they needed the solidity and go forward, just build it on again with the same group of management. So to lose those two key people in the organization is a travesty almost.
Yeah.
And then to have the unknown unknowns, to quote Donald Rumsfeld, of, well, who's actually going to take over here and not really know. Now, there seems to be a timeline issue around when all of this happened and when it was announced and who knew and when the players knew and all that kind of stuff. I find it too confusing in many ways. But the bottom line is, when you turn up for your preseason, you want the guy who's ultimately going to be selecting you for those Champions Cup games to be there at that point in time, and you don't want to be inheriting somebody new. I think that's a disaster, and it's going to make it a very, very difficult time for Munster. But there's probably few organisations in world sport who could have come through what they did and continue to grow that Munster is. So they have that maturity and they have that culture within them, certainly, but it is far from ideal.
They're a momentum team at the best of times, Liam, even when all things are going well. But this season in particular, you would imagine they need that early season momentum, because if there was a few early defeats, they can't. We've seen in latter years that it can be deflated down there, and you could see the fans becoming a little bit disaffected or whatever else. They do need a good start.
But on top of that, then you've got likes of Donegal Ryan, you know, when you
leaving,
you know, that whole hole, if you want, and the cost to replace him comes very much on the lap of the Munster organisation. So that's another big hurdle for them to cross and get a player. So you needed someone like him, especially now as things have unravelled with the coaching stuff. You need as many of those senior players. The flip side is then you got Conor Murray, who now has two all blacks in his pocket in the sense of victories and that. So you got players of his calibre coming back from the Lions tour, and obviously got the history of the win in Chicago. And you kind of say, well, these guys are becoming very, very special players. So whether they have the strength and depth around it, and there's some very exciting players in the Munster outfit, as you would expect. But again, it's going to be challenging to see, as you say, Jerry, can they just create that momentum again, or if they get a couple of difficult defeats. I think they're the champions pool that they're in pool four, I think it's relatively pleasant as opposed to a group of death, if that makes any sense.
On that Erasmus issue, Oisin was speaking to CJ Sander about the Erasmus departure and Nina Eber as well, and here's what the back row had to say about the situation.
Look, when the speculations came out, the first thing he did is call us all in and say, look, if he told us from the beginning, if he gets a job like this, they even created this job for him, so no one knew about this job, but if he gets it, he's going to go. So we all knew it was going to happen at some stage, you know, so we had like 3 years to think about it, and then it was only within a year that it happened. But like, we were kept in the loop all the time, and it's going to happen or it's not going to happen. So it was all speculations at the beginning, and they rang us on the line store and said, it's time now. The thing we spoke about happened, and look, we're proud of him, and I mean, they created a job for him that wasn't even there in history, you know. So I think what he did was he constructed a good structure outside of rugby, so the corporate side of it and inside of rugby, that the new guy coming in, that doesn't matter who the coach is, that we as players and staff and outside is driving Munster, and Munster is an important thing for us. So anyone coming in is just going to slip into that slot. And I mean, all the coaches, Fla and Felix is doing a great job, and we're going to miss him for sure. Me, man, Jock, I mean, they've brought a lot of energy, a lot of tactical things into our game, but you have to look at the big picture here. You know, we're a big team. We have to look after Munster, you know, and that's our big thing for now.
CJ mentions it there, the influence of Gerry Flannery and Felix Jones and the training pitch, Gerry, and it's something that Rasmus spoke to Oisin about as well, when he was saying that he has to make sure that their voices are increased on the training pitch during this period of transition. There seems to be an element of succession, as Munster seem to be almost in the Liverpool way fond of doing, but surely it's not going to fall on their shoulders to bear the brunt of the coaching and the setup for the duration of this season, or will it?
It might well do.
Do we know how far down the line talks have been, or if there's anybody even speaking?
I don't know, but I mean, if you look at it from their point of view, and there's nobody else in situ or lined up to succeed Razi Erasmus, they could conceivably carry on in the caretaker capacity. We've seen this with Leinster before. Mm. When they got rid of Matt O'Connor, there was no real plan B in place, and so the job kind of almost fell on Leo Cullen's shoulders a bit. Something similar. They've got a lot more time to work with here in Munster, and you'd imagine they are scouring the world. I do think that Felix Jones and Gerry Flannery have a huge amount to offer, just from knowing them over years as players and interviewing them and so forth. They're very intelligent guys. They're learning all the time. They must be better coaches now than they were when they started out in this. And they might well be in a position to take over in a caretaker capacity at the end of the season. Who knows? But I would imagine they're going to go abroad and actually line up a successor. Wouldn't you think so, Liam?
Yeah, but isn't the problem with our beautiful game of the Southern Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere, that contracts, coaches in the Southern Hemisphere will naturally start to come out of contract at the end of this given calendar year, whereas the Northern Hemisphere don't come out of contract till obviously the summer.
Yeah,
because so, you see them waiting it out until the new year then, until possibly have talks between now and then with somebody who might be in another job, and then wait until the year lapses, and then next thing you know,
If we were in the Premiership soccer, somebody would come along with a gigantic check and go off and get the person that they want, but I don't see that necessarily happening here. So, and then there's the obvious challenges, like for an amazing brand that Leinster and Munster and Connacht and Ulster are, but the amazing brand that Munster are, there are obvious challenges for attracting a real top-class coach in who may find it a little bit frustrating to come into the Irish system around the restrictions around buying in players, the Irish players. So in other words, that the hand and glove IRFU and the provinces, the way it all works for the betterment of Irish rugby, some coaches may find that a little bit too frustrating and say, listen, I don't really need that hassle. So that's another barrier of entry in many ways. So it isn't an easy, for an amazing brand that Munster is, it isn't as easy as just saying, listen, we need a coach who's interested, because of the time zones and the Northern Hemisphere and those other challenges that the Irish rugby places on the provincial coaches.
We could, I suppose, spend the whole night talking about Munster, because it is that fascinating a subject, especially the vacuum of information that seems to be on the coaching front. But Ulster are one of the more fascinating aspects of this coming season, given the addition to the backroom team of both John O'Gibbs and Dwayne Peel, and then to the playing staff as well of Christian Leilifano. Gerry, Ulster look like they are steeling themselves for a good season. They know last year really wasn't good enough. They reinstalled Rory Best in the last 24 hours as their captain for this year, and getting in coaches of the calibre of John O'Gibbs and Dwayne Peel, they seem to be all about their business this summer.
Yeah, and John O'Gibbs has an amazing CV when you think of his body of work in New Zealand as a player, and then with Leinster as a coach, working under Michael Checa and Joe Schmidt, and then working in the top couturiers at Clermont Auvergne. He clearly understands that the coaching game is a marathon, not a sprint, and he's built up a lot of knowledge, and he should now be, in theory, an even better coach than he was when he was with Leinster, and he enjoyed huge success there. But what makes a great coach? Great players. More than anything else, great players make great coaches, and Ulster have lost the most influential player probably in the last decade in Ruan Pienaar, and that leaves a big void as well. We were talking about earlier about Dunica Ryan and the void at leaving at Munster. You'd have to say that Ruan Pienaar's departure has left an even bigger void at Ulster. It looks like they mightn't have Paddy Jackson for a while either. So a huge amount of responsibility falls on John Cooney, a new signing, and Christian Leilifano. I watched him, you know, cut his teeth as a Test rugby player in that Lions series back in 2013, and he's a very accomplished footballer. Those two are the key. If those two stay fit and adapt very well at Ulster, then you know they've got certainly all the firepower in the world in their back line. The missing ingredient has been a bit of ballast going forward up front, but if they can rectify that, they could have a decent season. But it's a big season for them. It's a big season for Les Kiss, because towards the end of the last campaign, there was a clear disaffection within the Kingspan Stadium.
It was a drift.
There
seemed to be a drift towards the end of last season for Ulster, Liam, and that was a disconnect, as Gerry mentioned, between the fans and the players. And now they've got their own issues surrounding Paddy Jackson and co as well, that there is this sense of not knowing necessarily where they stand, but obviously needing to get off to a good start this Friday.
Yeah, and I've become a little like Gerry there with his Arsenal frustrations. When you watch Ulster, you have a tendency of becoming a little bit frustrated, because you can see the quality of what they're doing. You can see the quality of what Les Kiss is doing, and the quality of the players. But sometimes they just cannot just beat the team up in front of them and just dictate and dominate. And maybe that's the secret ingredient here, as Gibbs, as Jerry is reflecting, maybe that's the secret ingredient of the physicality of what Leinster, in many ways. You remember that game where when Cheka was involved, and it was 6-3 or something, when they beat Harlequins in the Stoop and the lashings of 6-5,
rain. 6-5, yeah.
Was that 6-5. That was like, okay, look, we're just not coming off the pitch here without winning this game, and we don't care how ugly, we're going to do it. Leicester have been doing that for years. Munster were doing that for years. Leinster learned how to do that, and I just don't think Ulster are there, and that's the bit of the ingredient that we'd love to see them. Like, they have more than enough quality in players, obviously with the loss of Ruan Pienaar. But for me, the front five, can they actually get out and just beat the hell out of the team in front of them? And that, I think Gibbs, and I don't mean that in a barroom brawl type of way. I mean that in the sense of the ruthlessness of a lineup maul, the ruthlessness of the breakdown, and the things that the processes that need to do, and to do it right, and to really understand. And losing their halfback pairing, for the reasons you guys have already said, is a massive negative to that, because those guys had the tempo of that team and they were growing into that. So to lose their 9 and 10 as they have is going to be hugely negative. But it'd be really interesting to see, for me, the front five, can they just go toe-to-toe with the opposition and know when to really dominate physically? And that's the bit that I think they haven't been able to do in the recent seasons.
It's a tricky process for that one. It's not necessarily the case for Gibbs of flicking a switch and that just happens. I mean, there's got to be a lot of groundwork has been put in, I would imagine, in the off-season, but it's going to be a continuing process, I'd say, throughout the first 2-3 months of the season, really, as well, Liam.
And looking at Ian Henderson, I would say, like, you know, this guy's just phenomenal. Like, he's just wonderful to watch playing rugby, because he has dance and poise, and he has physicality. He is an example of what I'm saying. He can do everything, but sometimes he might just have to just do one thing, which is beat the guy in front of him and dominate the guy in front of him. And you're right, of course, it takes a bit of time and it takes doggedness. I think Willie Anderson would be the type of fellow who'd say a bit of mongrel, I think, was the type of terminology he'd use. And a little bit of that is needed. Now, they've still a relatively young pack, if memory serves, and a relatively young, I know Rory Best would probably be delighted to hear he's associated with being relatively young. But in that sense, when you, again, looking back at Dunica Ryan, when you lose players of that calibre, they don't come around too often, you know, wizened old second rows, and that's something that Ulster need as well. So it is something that we'll have to see, but the difficulty for Ulster is they seem to get stuff right, and then they just lose it, or they come off the rails, and they find themselves having lost a couple of games that they probably scratch their head and go, how in God's name did you do that? And a lot of it is because they just haven't dominated that front five.
Yeah. Kieran Keane's addition to Connacht, Jerry.
Interesting.
Yeah?
Fascinating.
How so?
Well, he's been on the coaching treadmill for the best part of 40 years. He had a decent playing career, Canterbury, and played for the All Blacks, only playing in tests as an inside centre, and he's been coaching a long, long time. He took over Tasman in 2009, and they were bottom of what is the championship, which is effectively the second tier of the New Zealand Provincial Championship. And the first 3 years, they were beset by financial difficulties. There was talk of them going out of existence. They finished 9th, 12th, and then I think 14th, bottom of the heap. And he just ripped up the squad, and the coaching staff brought in a whole bunch of new players, came up with a new form of playing the game. The following year, a couple of years later, won the championship, got promoted, and the first ever promoted side to make the final playoff of the Premiership, and the following year made the semi. So it was a remarkable turnaround on very, very limited resources. It looked tailor-made for a CV to take over as Connacht head coach. I hear very good things about him. He was the attack coach then in the Waikato Chiefs. He has a very enterprising brand of rugby that he likes teams to play. It won't be quite as system-based as Pat Lam's way. It'll be much more the modern New Zealand way of playing the game, playing what you see in front of you, providing a framework. They'll need to be ultra-fit. They'll be entertaining. They'll score points. They'll score tries. You've also got Nigel Carolan in there as backs coach, who's been cutting his teeth for a long time as the head of their academy down there, and as a head coach of the Irish under-20s, which he did a fantastic job. Yeah. Jimmy Duffy, I only hear good things about as a forwards coach. He's still there, and it's important to have some continuity. And they brought in a specialist defensive coach in Peter Wilkinson, Peter Wilkins, who was the Queensland Reds and then the Edinburgh defensive coach, somebody with specific responsibilities for that. They should be much better primed for the new season than they were last year when they were very undercooked.
They weren't prepared for it's like one of those teams that aren't prepared to have two competitions on the boil, which they did.
It's tougher for them, yeah. But also they just weren't right for the start of the season because they lost one of the preseason friendlies, and unusually for them, of course, they played all the way to the final the previous season. But they still had the core of that squad. I hear Jared Butler, the back row, was a very good signing. Connor McKeown has looked very good in pre-season. He's only converted from out half to scrum half about a year ago. And I think they're an interesting case study. And I think KK, or Kieran Keane as he's known, is a very interesting appointment. He looks tailor-made for them. Like I said, I've heard good things about him. And they'll be good to watch. They'll score points. And I think they'll be entertaining to watch as well. I think it's very much the new Connacht module since they went from Eric Elwood then to Pat Lam and now onto him. They have to be different. They have to make their players better players, and I think they will get better under time under him, and I think they'll be good to watch.
Liam, they had a rancid year last year in terms of injuries. I mean, there wasn't a week that went by that we had at least two or three of their frontline players were missing and missing for extended periods. They need luck to be on their side to a degree this year as well, but do you think they have the playing squad again to cope with this Pro 14 season?
Well, the starting point is Bundee Aki, who now, is he Irish qualified now, Jerry?
Or will be in the autumn.
Will be. Mm-hmm. Okay, in the autumn. So Bundee Aki, as soon as he got injured in the mid, now Jerry's referred to the very challenging pre-season stuff they had, but when he got injured, you kind of said to yourself, wow, because the entire organization, like, he plays number 8 and centre in the same game, and that's asking a lot of any player, but he can do it. For me, Tiernan O'Halloran at full back is the interesting barometer to what they're doing, because I think the Connacht back three, when Connacht are at their best, certainly in that final against Leinster when they beat Leinster to win their first major championship, the Connacht back three were just absolutely wonderful, and I just don't think that they shone. And it's not a reflection necessarily on them. There was injuries, but the way the structures, the way the opposition teams were able to utilise an apparent Connacht strength from the previous season and turn it into a weakness, and Connacht just stuck rigidly to doing these things, and they kind of got themselves into a bit more trouble, and they didn't play. They tried to play their way out of trouble at times. So I think a little bit of pragmatism around how they manage all of that, and the injuries, obviously with Bundee Aki coming back, is a very useful one. I think it's about style, though. I think when you look at what Scarlets did under Wayne Pivac, the style that they brought, and I think, to be fair, Scarlets have a higher quality average player, we'll say, in their outfit than maybe Connacht, and indeed all the other sides for that matter. But that style that Wayne Pivac got, it'd be very interesting. Will Kieran Keane encourage his Connacht team to do something similar, a kind of a hybrid of what Pat Lam did?
Much less structured, Liam, I'm told. It's much more providing a framework and then play what you see. And so if that means kicking for space, then you kick for space. If that means you want to take the ball up, you take the ball up. And it will require huge levels of skills, I'm talking about high level of skills, that they're going to have to improve in training over time. I'd imagine there'd be a few hiccups along the way, but I think Connacht, to survive and flourish like they did under Pat Lam two seasons ago, have to think differently from everybody else. They almost have to play differently from everybody else. They have to be ambitious in the way they play. They're not going to bully teams.
Yeah, but there's definitely, if you look at like the Dennis Buckley, for example, one of the unsung heroes in Irish rugby, the prop Dennis Buckley, that is, like, along with his general prop play, he's just phenomenal at what he can do around the ball, like what we expect from a loosehead prop. He really is. So there certainly is no lack of ambition. And their skill set, particularly how the forwards intermingle, if that's a word, between forwards and backs, how forwards and backs actually play in amongst each other, and there's no issue around what they're actually doing. Where you see other Irish sides from time to time, there's a sense of panic. If a certain forward gets the ball in a certain part of the pitch, he might panic. But look at Dennis Buckley, he's very comfortable anywhere on the pitch. So there's no lack of ambition, and you're right, Jerry, of course, the skill set. But if they stick rigidly to their game plan when it's not working, as they did at times last season, mm-hmm. I think they'll become unstuck. Because the bottom line is, they'll be playing against teams that are aware of the potential dangers of what Connacht can do, and they'll be playing against teams that most likely will have a stronger playing structure, stronger squad and that sort of stuff. So it will be really interesting to see when pressure, real pressure, comes on, what the new Kieran Keane situation does. And it's another exciting opportunity for us to watch.
He's only been there... he's only been there 3 weeks, so you know, there will be hiccups. You've got to give him time. But the one thing they've got going for them as well, Richie, is the core of the squad that won the league 2 years still ago there. Is still there. And they won't have that many international call-ups during the Six Nations or during the November window. So they will have a fairly settled team, and they've got a lot of, you know, the John Muldoons and all this world driving standards there. I think they'll be decent this season.
Okay. We didn't even get to talk about Leinster, who've been modelled for stability this coming season.
Well, can I say one quick thing about Leinster? They still have the Stuart Lancaster effect. They were the best team in the competition last year up until blowing the semi-final against 14 men at home. We talk about the influence of CJ Stander, Conor Murray, Peter Manning, Munster, and all the lines that are filtered through Ulster, Leinster and Munster, and indeed the Ospreys and the Scarlets as well. Ultimately, 2021 game season, your leading frontline internationals are barely going to play if even half those games. So it's a test of your squad strength and depth more than anything. And Leinster have the best squad.
There you go. That wraps up nicely our Wednesday night rugby. Jerry Thorney, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Cheers.
And Liam Tolan as well, thanks so much for speaking to us this evening. And enjoy the rest of the season. Enjoy the season as it kicks off this Friday.
Thank you.
Cheers, Liam. At last time we did a roadshow at the Olympia, Ronan O'Gara trashed one of the Antique Lights by attempting to score a drop goal on the stage. But the good folks there have forgiven us, thankfully, and letting us have the run of the gaff on September the 14th. We'll be there for our All-Ireland Football Final Roadshow, thanks to AIR, the official sponsor of the GAA Football All-Ireland Senior Championship. Liam McHale, David Brady, Tomás O'Shea, James Horan and Charlie Redmond will be just some of the footballing legends who'll be joining us on the night. If you want to come along, and we'd love to have you there, then get on to newstalk.com/OTBGA. or ticketmaster.ie right now for your chance to get user tickets. newstalk.com/OTBGA or ticketmaster.ie, and it's always thanks to AIR. We'll be back after these.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to AIR. Catch all the sports you love free on the AIR Sport Pack with AIR Broadband.